the Pilot TV podcast. This week, we're enmeshed in the cutthroat world of secondary school gymnastics in The Gathering on Channel 4, sending in the clones in Orphan Black Echoes, which makes its belated UK debut on ITV, and slipping on our tartan noir as we go back on the beat with Ian Rankin's most famous Bobby, who returns to our screens in BBC One's freshly rebooted Rebus. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a show that is still without Kay this week because she remains on holiday. But don't worry, do not fret, for we have an excellent replacement for her here this week, because making her Pilot TV debut is Middlesbrough's finest, the one, the only, it's Sophie Butcher.
Hello.
Hey. How you feeling, Soph?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. Slightly good. Delirious, but otherwise fine. And Boyd is here as well.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm very excited to have Sophie on board.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm excited to be here.
This is a wild card. I don't know how this is going to go. Like, you know what you're getting. You know, I'm getting, like, when Beth comes in, I know I'm getting, like, thinly veiled contempt. Oh, you know, I know what I'm letting myself in for. I don't know what Sophie's going to do. She could kick
are
off.
You
she could go
me.
Wild. Yeah.
Are you, strictly speaking, Sophie's boss?
Yes.
I mean, that's an interesting thing. I'm actually, strictly speaking, Kay's
You're Kay's boss,
yeah,
but you'd never know it, would you?
Exactly. So. No, that's very much just like on paper.
Yeah.
In reality, 100%.
I've been cheeky a few times on the Empire podcast and thought, oh.
It's fine.
He
I command no respect whatsoever.
This is a safe space.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. All bets are off.
Yeah, absolutely.
What happens in the pod booth stays in the pod booth.
Mm. Yeah, apart from the millions of people listening.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Yeah. It's possible there are witnesses.
Yeah.
It's possible there are witnesses. Well, let's start with you, Sophie. What have you been watching for the whole of your life?
For the whole of my life?
Well, I don't know. Normally I say it's since you've last been on, like Beth had a year to catch up on, but you have your entire life to catch up on. Well, let's start with recently. What have you been watching recently?
Do you know what's actually quite upsetting and I should have thought about because I knew I was coming on, in that the only thing that I've been watching recently is re-watching Gossip Girl.
Oh, which one, though? Which one?
Yeah, that's a good,
the original.
Good,
the original. Okay, the original and best.
I haven't seen the remake. I've been in a bit of a zone. I've been very busy. And when I'm very busy, my brain can't handle new things. And so I've just been re-watching Gossip Girl.
And is that your
happy
place?
Other stuff than that. Generally, promise. Oh, I've got a wider taste.
Don't apologise. James's answers this every week is friends.
Yeah.
So
it's
know.
A comfort watch.
Well, yeah, I do always have a sitcom rewatch on the go. For when I'm not rewatching Gossip Girl.
Which
might be Friends. At the moment it's Superstore.
Oh yeah, Superstore.
So it could be Friends, it could be New Girl. I recently rewatched New Girl. It could be Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it could be Superstore.
These are the classics.
Mm. Yeah, I have something
these are
like
millennial sitcoms.
Very much
Yeah.
Have you haven't seen any of the new Gossip Girl?
No.
It's wild.
Is it good?
Yeah.
I did mean to watch it when it came out and then I just never got around to
it's,
it.
It's like they've taken the original Gossip Girl and ratcheted it up
right,
to 11.
Okay.
It's Gen Z to the max.
It is. Oh my God, there's orgies, there's ludicrous set piece, kind of, not violence, but just kind of like weird, freaky goings on. It's crazy. It's interesting.
Rewatching the original, like it's fairly tame.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there's not much
right.
going on.
Yeah,
and it's all about people on their Blackberries, like sending email blasts and like none of it really applies to life now.
No.
But it feels nice to think of a time and just watching like the fashion and like the endless accessories and the massive handbags. It always makes me think of in the later series of Success with Tom and his ludicrously capacious bag.
Yeah,
that's not what was going on. That wasn't the picture of wealth back in 2007 or whatever it was. Like the bigger the bag, the better on Gossip Girl. So there's really been a change in standards. And so I like to see
the
difference.
Feature coming on bag size in modern day TV. Yeah, TV shows.
And what it tells us about wealth.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
Upper East Siders, let's find out.
Did you watch the Gossip Girl reboot?
We reviewed it on this podcast.
Yeah. We got madder and madder as it went on.
Yeah, I wasn't there for the mad stuff.
Yeah.
I just watched this one.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Mm. Okay, good. So Gossip Girl is what Soph has been watching. Boydie, what nonsense have you been pouring into your eyeballs this week?
Charming. Well, I'll do the various bits and pieces first. I went to a screening of We Are Lady Parts. Series 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you watch the original series?
I haven't.
Well,
it's one of those things that I know that I'll like.
You will.
I just haven't seen.
So the first series was brilliant.
Yeah.
Obviously, the new series is heavily embargoed, but I did go to the screen. I showed two episodes, and there was a Q&A with the creator, Nida Manzur, writer, director, producer. She does the whole fucking thing. And the stars and the whole cast were there. And obviously, it's heavily embargoed, but yeah, it's we were reviewing it. Sometimes we don't review second series of shows.
So. We will review it.
Oh, okay, good.
Yes.
James decided. Likes
editorial
it.
Because I like it. Yeah. Yes.
Well, yeah, I'll reserve what I've got to say, but it was a fantastic event. Good to see it. Those first two episodes. Inside Number 9 is ongoing. So we've had the first episode set on the Liverpool-based train system,
yes,
which was brilliant. Went out as we were speaking last night, as we were recording this on Thursday, Wednesday. The one next Wednesday is the two-parter with Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton, which is fantastic and has loads of twists and turns. And then the one after that is Mulberry Close, which is the one shot entirely from the point of view of a door cam on a suburban house.
Oh, like a Ring doorbell, right.
Yeah, which I think is one of the best episodes ever.
Could I just say that while I was recording the Empire podcast just before this, I got a message from Joe Bear about that particular Inside Number 9, the first one, the train one.
Yeah.
And Joe says that she lives on the Wirral and their tube, quote unquote, runs a circuit around four Liverpool stations, basically the city centre and under the Mersey to their side, with a couple of underground stations and then out to open air. She just switched on Inside Number 9 and she's assuming that all the actors are knackered because the last train is just before midnight and then the first is 5:30.
Wow. I seem to remember when I interviewed them for the Mac for the Empire, and I think they talked about how it was quite a challenge to film it because they didn't get managed to close it down. So all the scenes where people were going in and out of the train were, you know, they couldn't stop people going around them. So they were basically surrounded by members of the public to some extent during the filming of that.
So they just filmed it just during a regular commute.
I think they tried to do it as late as possible.
Yeah, but they didn't get to do it while it was
while it was completely closed. I don't think. I'm pretty sure that's what they said. Yeah. So Inside Number 9, final series carrying on in brilliant form. I watched all of Bodkin, which the amusingly named Bodkin, which is the place
sounds
where
like
it's
a
set.
Hobbit from
Ireland.
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, and it didn't get better. I finally have a review on Front Row tonight, so I'm doing it. If you really want to hear me banging on about Bodkin more than twice,
then subscribe to Pilot Plus, which is where we review Bodkin.
Oh yeah, we reviewed it on Pilot Plus, didn't we? Yeah, and so but you can get it for free for me talking about it on BBC Radio 4.
Well done, Boyd.
Yeah,
completely undermine the whole subscription system.
Sorry, but finally the big one. It's the big one. Sugar. The mad episode 6, Sugar, I have watched.
Which I have alluded to on two previous podcasts.
Yes.
But then, we cut out a lot of it because decided there were spoilers.
Because you ruined it, yeah.
Because I ruined it.
Yeah.
But that's actually true, I did ruin it for Boyd and Kay. But so this has, on the subreddit, everyone is kind of still in shock about episode 6.
And people have been sending messages on X as well.
Yeah, Twitter. Yeah.
Please don't call it X.
No, Twitter. And people say, oh God, I've just watched it, blah, blah, blah. But I watched all the ones leading up to it and then that episode. Then I've also watched episode 7, the following episode, which is this week's live one, if you like, to see the aftermath of that final scene in episode 6. And I can't really say much because it will spoil it even more, but it's just weird the way they deal with the whole thing. And all, by the way, let me just say, without spoiling it, that what I heard was the big thing that is dealt with in episode 6 wasn't quite what I expected. So I either got the wrong end of the stick, or you or whoever else mentioned to me, who I heard from, that there was this thing that happens in episode 6. I just misunderstood or misheard. I was like, because it's a different thing that I was expecting. Anyway,
interesting.
Yeah.
So you were still surprised.
But I was still, well,
well I'm glad I managed to unspoil it for you.
I knew this thing was coming, of whatever, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the actual precise nature of it, I didn't realise.
Right.
So I was like, oh, that's not what I was expecting, yeah. But it is absolutely fucking batshit.
It's off the wall batshit, yeah.
And I really want to know that, obviously we'll have to wait until the whole thing plays out, with two more episodes, I think, 8, I think.
Mm.
To hear from the creators to explain what, you know, was that, like, did they almost like create this LA noir murder mystery thing and then decide to do this as well? Or was it always the conception from the start? It's fascinating, yeah. I don't know.
I haven't seen any yet.
No.
I've actually cancelled my Apple TV subscription.
Sophie, you cannot be on this podcast and I have an Apple TV Plus subscription.
I had to make a call and it's the one I watch the least.
Wow.
It's also the one that I can't get on my TV in my room, so I can only watch it downstairs in the living room. Yeah. And it's hard to get, you know, there's fight over the remote downstairs. And so it had to go.
Well, now that you're a Pilot TV podcast review, surely we can get you on the you know, on the Apple Hub to watch this.
I might
stuff
have
for free.
Access to that.
Oh, the Screener Hub, the holy Screener Hub, which I've spent a lot of time recently, because that segues quite nicely into what I've been watching.
Yeah,
I alluded to this last week when I said I had begun watching Presumed Innocent, which is, as we said, heavily embargoed. I powered through Presumed Innocent, whereby offering no judgment call whatsoever on the quality. I am in no way reviewing this or breaking an embargo. I powered all the way through it and had a horrifying, horrifying revelation while watching this show. And that's that 7 hours in, well, not 7 hours, like 40-odd, 50-minute episodes. Seven episodes in, it stops because...
What do you mean?
They have not put the final episode on the Screening Hub. There are eight episodes. They put seven
you really
on the Screening
Hub. You really picked that up like it was going to be some sort of personal revelation.
Yeah.
It
is.
It's just that it's been withheld, the final has
because
been withheld from
that's
you.
That's fairly standard, by the way.
No, it's not. It's not on Apple.
Yeah,
it's not.
It is.
It is absolutely not. On Apple, they whack the episodes up.
Right.
All the episodes tend to be up there. They have withheld the final episode of this. I am not happy. I'm not amused.
They've done that a couple of times.
I am deeply stressed out by this.
Also, we've just you don't remember at all the film.
No, okay, so there's two things. There are two things. One, I genuinely don't remember how the film ends.
Okay.
And two, I'm not sure they're going to stick to that ending anyway. And I wonder whether that's the reason they've withheld the final episode. Or maybe they've withheld the final episode so we can't even have the conversation about whether or not they've stuck to the original ending. So basically, all bets are off. Everything's to play for.
No presumptions. Don't presume anything.
I'd be amazed if they didn't stick to the original ending, which I believe is also the ending from the book. I think that would be...
Well, I've neither read in the book nor remembered the film,
right.
So, you know.
Right.
But
are you tempted to watch the film so you know the
absolutely
end?
Absolutely not, no, because I
he's too invested
obviously cannot tell you whether or not I am enjoying the series, but the fact that I have ploughed through seven episodes in like a couple of days should give you some indication.
Yeah. That is a blow. I can see that's a blow. Yeah,
I'm feeling particularly. So I'm hoist by my own entitled petard.
You really
because
are.
Now I may end up having to wait until it airs in fucking July.
Oh my
is
God.
It even July? Like by the time the final episode, it's probably September or something.
No.
By the time it finally ends,
it's autumn.
It's gonna be months away to find out how it ends.
There's only eight parts. It's gonna be that. Then they're probably showing two or three. They usually start with two or three.
Well,
but we'll then show it weekly.
We'll see.
The dark side of
but, yeah,
TV journalism.
I'm feeling quite. I need my fix. I need to know.
Yeah,
give me the episode. So that's quite
all of Sugar instead.
I could watch All of Sugar. Yeah.
Which is, by the way, is in useful kind of 30 to 40 minute chunks. It's not
is
the
it?
Episodes. Yeah,
that's very appealing.
Yeah, it is appealing in this day and age of extended episodes.
Yeah,
but I have season two of Out of Range to watch, so I do have screeners for that. Finally, but I only just got them, so we did not get them in time to review Out of Range season two on this podcast. I mean, not that we necessarily would have done because we've got some new shows to review. But I am I'm excited to get back into what's going on with Josh Brolin and his giant mysterious hole.
You love saying
that. I do. The giant mysterious
he was
hole.
He describing it to cheeky. Me last night, and that's how he described it.
I was going
it,
off about
like,
the kissing
okay.
again while we were at the screening for Apes,
yeah.
And it was mad. It's, I mean, it remains mad. But we won't spend any more time.
I've watched I watched the first couple of season one, but I need to go.
Yeah,
back.
It's wild.
Yeah, yeah. Good old Josh. He's directed some of this as well, hasn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah,
has he?
I read the...
From within the hole or without?
I don't know. He's directed his own hole. So to speak.
That's
well,
sense.
Yeah.
Extraordinary stuff. Okay, now...
on that note.
We would normally now move on to the postbag. However, the mistress of the postbag is one Kay Ribeiro, and she's not here.
Now, hang on a minute.
What?
Kay is the mistress of the postbag.
Yes.
Via our social media accounts.
Yes.
Which is my job.
Oh.
And I said to you last night, I'll find you a question if you want. And you went, no. No, no.
Did I say
that? Yeah.
Exposing the inner workings.
I have no recollection of that.
So I don't have a question.
Oh, I think it was more of a, you're right, you do have access to social media accounts. I probably should have said, yeah, find some questions. No, it didn't even occur to me. I was more just like trying to say, oh, no, don't worry. You don't need to do extra stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought what we would do, we would address a long-standing injustice/grievance on this podcast, which is that Boydie television critic that he is, spends a lot of time on this podcast talking about films, specifically his favourite films, because every film Boydie mentions on this podcast is apparently one of his favourite films. So it has come to our listeners' attention that we do not have a canonical list of Boydie's favourite films. So what we're going to do now is we're going to assemble Boydie's list of favourite films.
God,
so that whenever you refer to a film, you cannot say, oh, that's one of my favourite films, because it's not on the canonical list. So, Boydie, Boyd Hilton, I put it to you now. What are your five favourite films of all time, canonically, for the record, for our listeners?
Oh, that's you didn't
can't
warn me about
spring
this.
Spring this on someone.
Of course I can.
This is like Letterboxd of top four.
That's right. Yeah.
Evil. That is evil.
Yeah, isn't
okay. The ones that come to mind right now are Dressed to Kill, Brian De Palma's Dressed to Kill.
Are any of these going to be films you've mentioned previously on the podcast referred to as your favourite films?
I think they're all ones I mentioned before. Dressed to Kill, Brian De Palma, Midnight Run, De Niro, Charles Grodin, Seven, David Fincher's Seven, which, by the way, I've got a bone to pick with Seven. Seven is supposed to be coming out on, they've remastered it in 8K for 4K Blu-ray release, right? Yeah. And they screened it in LA as part of a film festival thing, which David Fincher was involved in. He was interviewed about it, saying, and at the end of the article, they said it was being released in the US on May the 3rd, or wherever it was, this past Monday, wherever it was. Mm. So I went on that, jumped on Amazon.com, the American Amazon, to order it for a princely sum of about 80 quid because I'm so obsessed with this film, one of my favourite films. that's why I'm discussing it on the list. But it's not coming out then at all. And in fact, it's not coming out apparently until like Christmas this year or something, or even next year. So now I've paid all the money, I just have to wait.
How would you watch Seven, Boyd?
I know.
It's not available on any other medium.
But it has never come out properly on a properly director-approved version on proper Blu-ray 4K. It's out on Blu-ray, but not. I think he wasn't necessarily entirely pleased with the transfer, basically.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, so Seven.
And is it streaming in 4K?
No, it's not streaming anywhere in 4K.
Okay.
No, you can get it only in HD. Yeah.
To watch it with minimal care.
So you're having to slum it to 1080p.
Totally slumming it. Yeah. It's
how
irritating.
Disgusting.
Anyway, where was I? So Midnight Run, Dressed to Kill,
and Seven.
I have to say, I know it's controversial. Annie Hall.
Okay.
Right. Annie Hall / Manhattan, one or both Woody Allen films. I'm so sorry. And what would be the fifth one? Right now, I'd probably go slightly unadventurously, boringly for The Godfather Part 2 or Apocalypse Now, something like that. One of those Francis Ford Coppola films.
I mean, The Godfather Part 1 is better, but that's fine.
Yeah, I agree with
not.
That, actually.
Or Alien. I also love Alien, and I would
Aliens
mention
better,
Alien.
But that's fine.
Well, that's exactly why I was going to mention it, because Alien is better than Aliens.
It's not.
It is.
So that's fine.
It is objectively better than Aliens.
Not even close.
It's an absolute masterpiece.
It is, but also not.
Then if you're going top 10, Blade Runner, probably. So yeah, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's a little... I think I've mentioned all of those, because we definitely had thrashed out the Aliens controversy.
Whereby you were wrong.
Whereby you're wrong.
I'm surprised to see that Unfrosted does not appear on your list of best ever films.
Well, I know you loved Unfrosted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, 2 stars I'll never see again.
With the rest of the Empire team. But I'm fully in favour of Chris Hewitt's comments about it, talking about how much he enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I'm in full agreeance on that.
When you listen to the Empire podcast, he does give a stalwart defence of that in the face of mine and Helen's indifference.
Yeah, thankfully, yeah. I'm with Chris on this one, yeah. But that's the kind of general gist of mine. I'd probably go like Rear Window, Hitchcock, or even maybe Notorious, a few Hitchcocks, yeah.
All right.
Anyway, but yeah, so now I'm stretching out to the top 10.
That's the list.
Yeah.
I'm laminating
someone
it.
Someone write it down.
I am laminating the list.
Someone write it down.
You can now never deviate from this list.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're imposing these rules on me.
We're taking the Friends rules. Wow. It's now laminated. Wow. It is set in stone, or rather set under plastic.
That's crazy.
There we go. Okay. Boydie's favourite films, established for all time.
Mm.
While we're on the subject of favourite things, obviously this is Sophie's first time on this particular podcast. So, Sophie, I would like to take a trip down memory lane, specifically your memory, your lane, and your television watching habits. So, what are your favourite shows?
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to give me five. Yes, in fact, you do have to give me five. I want your five favourite TV shows, preferably in order.
Right, okay. In order. I'd written some down, but I haven't got them in order.
Were you pre-warned? Oh, I'm glad you were. That's someone was.
Okay, so, no, he mentioned that he might ask me about my favourite TV shows. Okay, number one is probably Succession.
Yes.
I've thought about it long and hard.
Recency bias.
No.
But also, I've rewatched it 3 times since it came out. And that's...
The whole thing?
Not since the last season came out, but I rewatched every season as the new season came out, if you know what I mean. Like, I've watched it all again every time a new one came out, and I still love it. New Girl is probably up there. Huh? I really love New Girl, and I feel like not a lot of people watch it, but it just makes me really happy.
It seems to have, like, it has a following, certainly.
Yeah, it's got a very dedicated following, I would say.
But I think, generally speaking, people were a bit mixed on it when it started.
Yeah, they were, but I think it's kind of grown in popularity as well, especially since, like, lockdown and stuff. I'd probably put Fleabag in there. Is that a bit basic?
No, absolutely.
Is Girls a bit basic?
No.
Probably put that in
completely.
There.
Completely, yeah.
So that's four. I don't know what my fifth would be. I've got loads of other favourites, like I love My Mad Fat Diary. I love the Netflix Daredevil series. Wow. I love Barry.
Yeah.
I like the OA.
Yes.
Love the OA.
Now we're talking. Let's just say it's the OA.
We can say it's the OA.
Yeah,
I'm fine with that. I was a big Orange is the New
Daredevil
Black fan.
Netflix is an interesting...
I love that. I've watched that loads of times. I love...
All three seasons, even the second one.
The second one's not as good.
No. And all three of them are too long.
But the first season and the third season are just bangers.
Was that? Are there 13 each in those?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The second one is,
I won't deny, it's not great. But it's like the third season is great. So overall, it balances out and I really love it.
Well, I mean, you can't argue with the maths.
No. And I'm very excited that Charlie Cox is back as Daredevil.
Yes, that is true.
So that's a bit of me.
And we're talking about Jessica Jones a little bit later on.
I know.
Kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an excellent list, yeah.
Maybe that's all recency bias. I've got very big blind spots. I haven't seen The Sopranos. I haven't seen The Wire. I've tried to watch Breaking Bad three times. And I can't get past four episodes.
Is it
the
difficult men oeuvre?
Yeah,
you just kind of skirt around.
Problematic.
Yeah.
Problematic. No, it's not. I think I would love those shows. I just never have sort of gotten around to watching them. I've watched The West Wing. Not all of it, but a good chunk
Jesus
of it.
Christ.
Like 3-4 seasons.
That's pretty good.
I'm thinking of older stuff, like Lost. Yeah, I love Lost. Heroes, the first season. I'm trying to think of older things. But yeah, in terms of like all-time favourites.
Sophie says older things. And we just made Boyd thinking stuff we wrote about while we were working here.
Girls, last week.
That's me, I would say.
Quite
a varied taste, I like to think.
This very, very. This always happens where I suddenly remember something I've watched that I didn't write down because but I watched the finale of Girls. It was on live TV. It was on Sky Atlantic the other day.
Oh, right.
Early this week. And it was, I love Girls. I think it was absolutely brilliant. But the finale was a real disappointment.
Yeah, it kind of, the first three seasons are amazing.
Yeah.
For me, it does kind of go downhill.
Yeah.
But those first ones are so good.
It's still great. It's
still up there.
But I remember the penultimate episode being really good. But the finale is a major, major disappointment, I would say.
Very iffy.
Yeah.
I never made it to the end of Girls.
Well, you should.
Give it a try.
Okay.
There you go.
Something else I wanted to briefly touch on. I guess we were going to get into this in news, but I guess it's preempting it slightly. So obviously the baby reindeer stuff has kicked up yet another notch, hasn't it?
I was going to mention this in news.
Yes, because this feels like something that we should briefly
aspect of it, because there's there's literally like three stories about this every day in the news now. So the one I'd just seen literally this afternoon was Russell T Davies talking about how if it'd been on the BBC, they would have been much stricter with the editorial compliance processes. And he was talking about that in an interview with The Times. And he said, compliance and editorial policy drives us mad here, but I sleep at night, he said. And that was kind of independent. And then Benjamin King, Netflix's UK senior public policy director, was at a kind of parliamentary hearing. And he talked about how they did what they could, blah, blah, blah. But then people have pointed out that he basically said he doesn't want to live in a world where Richard was silenced, not able to tell his story. But at the same time, he could have been more vague about the details so that people couldn't track down the real person / people involved. So, yeah.
It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
That show's left, like, it made me feel so weird. I binge-watched it in about 2 days, and then I was by myself, cat-sitting for a friend, for the weekend after, and just, it put me in a weird headspace.
Was this Beth? Were you cat-sitting for Beth?
I was cat-sitting for Beth.
You were cat-sitting Beth's cat, Risky.
Me and Risky were sat there watching Baby Reindeer, and then we had a day by ourselves, and we felt weird.
Risky's devastated.
Yeah, Risky was really shaken by it. I think it's interesting, the compliance thing, isn't it? Because it's like that show is so vulnerable. It feels almost too vulnerable and too honest. Like, part of the impact of it is that those messages are real and the spelling and everything and all of it feels real and weird and it's there. But then it makes it easier for these, you know, for her to be found in all of this. And it's just like,
and she, well,
is the art more important? I don't know. It's really...
She's doing an interview with Piers.
Yeah,
well,
is,
that's the other aspect of it. So yeah. She did an interview with the Daily Record, didn't she?
Yeah.
Where she allowed them to name her, even though her name was out there on the internet now. But she's sitting down with, of all people, Piers fucking Morgan.
Horrifying.
Mm. Yeah. Which is happening, I think, tonight, Thursday, so it was recording this, so we haven't heard it.
So it will have been out.
Yeah.
Because it's live, isn't it? It's a live interview?
I think so.
Yeah, so that will be
it's
out.
Live.
That will be out there when we air.
Gee whiz.
Yeah. I mean, this is on top of the recent... Oh, yeah, I can't even talk about it. The Kevin Spacey thing, anyway. You know, Kevin Spacey's interview with Dan Wooden.
God, two cursed characters.
Indeed.
Jesus Christ.
Indeed. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's... But yeah, it's the baby reindeer thing is going to be like, people are going to be writing, you know, theses on it because it's so interesting. How I do think I do think Netflix. I mean, again, this guy, I should quote the Benjamin King, the Netflix policy director, said. He said, "We took every reasonable precaution in disguising the real life identities of the people involved in that story." I think people have pointed out you didn't really.
Did you though?
Yeah. So. I think that's open to debate. And I think the big problem, which Richard Osman pointed out in his podcast, which is very good, that it says this is a true story. That's the opening. That's the title.
And then some of the facts are, by all account, in dispute, right?
Right. But, you know, it doesn't need to say this is a true story. There's loads of ways of finessing that, you know. This is based on a true story.
Yeah.
This is mostly a true... You know, there's people always doing versions of that. But to let the creator, Richard Gadd, put that and to stick with that's going to put you in a whole load of trouble.
Because the ending in particular seems to be, certainly the claim is, very much not the case, right?
Well, the ending, you mean the final, literally the final scene?
Not the final scene, but just the, I'm steering around people who haven't seen it.
Okay.
So,
yeah, fair enough. Yes, I know what you mean.
And,
yeah.
You know, events like in the show, he puts on a show and there's the video, it didn't all quite happen as it happens in the show.
Yeah,
he's obviously sped things up for short runtime.
Of course, but that's what makes it. It's a very compelling, fast-paced kind of thriller almost, and that's partly because obviously it's not. He's finessed as you would. He's dramatized the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm repeating this, but like obviously people have been trying to guess who the TV producer was as well. And it's like
Though apparently that is also something that is out there.
Hugely problematic. Also that. Entirely innocent people have been accused of that.
That's right,
And, you know, and he had to come out and say, no, it wasn't that person or that person, and then there's another person being named.
Yeah, but like, this was always going to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's the problem.
Well, no, was it, though? Because I don't think anyone knew that this would become what it became. Because if this had been a kind of an also-ran thing on Netflix that eight people watched on a, Friday night, this would never have become a thing. It's because it's captured the zeitgeist so much that the internet has suddenly, like the Eye of Sauron has focused
Yeah, but there was a way of doing it. I think the point that Russell T. Davis is making a lot of people, and I would make, is there was a way of doing it that wasn't so boldly claiming that this is a true story. And I don't think he should have been silenced or anything, but there's a middle ground between him telling this story in a dramatic way and it being literally, him saying literally this is a true story and implying that everything is true, and then people wanting to scurry off and try and find the real life equivalent of these people. He could have finessed it, he could have been much more vague and just said...
But you know why? Like, because it's more powerful, isn't it? It's a more powerful statement.
It'd be slightly less powerful for me. I still think it would have been a brilliantly powerful series if he'd have gone, this is partly based on stuff that happened in my life. And left it as vague as that.
Yeah, but again,
I still think it's a very powerful
story. I don't know that it would have captured people's imagination in the same way if you said, this is a drama. It's very, very loosely based on a real thing.
No, I think it's the thing that is, the reason it's partly that, but I think the main reason it's such a phenomenon is because of the show itself.
Sure.
It's so compelling.
But I think watching it and knowing it's real gives it a dimension that otherwise it would never possess. That there's because there's an honesty, there's a raw, confessional, almost voyeuristic honesty to that show. And knowing it's real makes you feel so uncomfortable all the way through it.
You feel so weird after it, because it's like, you almost feel like you shouldn't be looking at this.
Right. That's exactly how Risky felt.
Yeah. She was very shaken.
Yeah.
But also, it's tricky, isn't it? Because I think even however you could word that at the beginning, whether you say it is true, it's based on a true story, it's inspired by real life events. I think the issue is that when people, and I do it too, I can feel myself doing it. When you watch something and you know that there's a kernel of truth, part of you like thinks that all of it is true.
Yeah.
It's really hard to like separate yourself.
You treat it like that a documentary.
Probably, it's like, yeah, you just sort of, because, and when the show's as good as that and you're just so involved, it's really hard to like separate and think that's probably not all true. You just sort of take it as gospel when it's presented in that way, even whatever that language is at the start. I think it's really hard as an audience member to distinguish.
That I agree with that, but if you're there, I think the impact and the fallout would have been less if you hadn't have made that claim so starkly at the beginning. And if you hadn't have then had to basically say, this is all happened to me, you know, pretty much as depicted. I think if you'd have been, I still think if you'd have been more vague, you know. And maybe you're right. Maybe that was the reason why Netflix didn't force him to be more vague or didn't, you know, do that, because they thought it was more powerful and been a bigger hit. But I don't know. This is all conjecture. But I think there are loads of really powerful true stories that have been on TV where people have said, yes, it's roughly based on my experience, but I'm not going to go into the detail. That's all you need to say. That's all you need to say. And then... Yeah.
But also, like, you have to look at whether or not what has been done would class as defamation, because there's a whole legal bar to clear there, isn't there?
So, well, I mean, I'll be amazed if there aren't legal.
Well, she's a lawyer, helpfully, and she said that she might represent herself and sue him directly.
Yeah.
But obviously, you'd have to prove that, A, it isn't true, which by all accounts possibly could be done, but also that it has actually caused damage to her reputation.
Mm. Oh, completely, but...
But enough of the facts, as my understanding is, enough of the facts are true that the question is whether or not that would. But I mean, who knows? That'd be for a court to decide.
I think
let's not litigate that here, shall we?
We'll get into it.
Let's not get into that particularly muddy water.
Oh, but it's all just, and it's part of the reason, like, as I was watching the show, I was like, this is so good. This is, like, affecting me so much. But I just kind of feel a bit icky about it. I don't know. And it's not that I didn't want him to be able to tell that story, or I didn't want those stories to be out there, but something just, it's left me just feeling really weird and not necessarily in a good or, I don't know.
I think that's
the desired
effect, isn't it? I'm not saying that shouldn't exist. I don't know.
No, I think it's a very common response.
There's an ick. There's an ick to the whole thing. Like, it's not, like, it's a quote unquote comedy, but it's upsetting and it's distressing and it makes you feel weird. And, you know.
All of this is just magnifying that's coming after it.
Yeah. But weirdly, it's not like they're not like keeping a low profile. They've just been in the States doing more promotion for it, which is, so it's fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Well, there you go. I guess that dovetails nicely into news itself, given that we've already covered some of that. So what has happened in the world of news? A couple of things, actually, that I wanted to mention here. So specifically, you mentioned Blade Runner in your favourite films, Boydie.
Yes.
But the Blade Runner 2099 series, which is barreling towards us, has added Michelle Yeoh to its roster. So are you more or less excited about it now?
Oh, more. Michelle Yeoh's always.
But how do you feel about the fact they're making a series about Blade Runner? Like, how did you feel about Denis Villeneuve's film?
I thought I loved it.
Okay, good. Yeah. So you're not a purist. Yeah. You're not like,
leave my
film alone.
No, I mean, when you've got talent like Denis Villeneuve involved, then it stands a pretty good chance to be. And is he involved in this in some exec producer?
I don't know.
Ridley Scott certainly is in some kind of exec producer capacity.
Yeah, Ridley's executive producing, but the showrunner is Silke Louisa.
Okay. Yeah, I'm open-minded. I'll give it a go. These things never bother me. Even if it's not some, you know, a renowned genius making it, I still it still doesn't besmirch the original thing for me. So it's fine. Both Blade Runner and the sequel were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see what they do. And the thing about the good thing about it is that nowadays the budget for it will be cinematic. It will be epic and cinematic, I'm sure, because they can make that kind of stuff for TV. You know, where if it had been like even just 5-10 years ago, I'm sure it wouldn't have been. Mm. It would have been a bit lame. But now at least potentially the visuals. I'm sure it will be stunning.
It'll look amazing.
Yeah,
yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. When is it going to be on? Do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's going to shoot this year, though, I think.
Right. Oh, yeah, so we have to wait. So.
Maybe like next year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good because I want Michelle Yeoh to keep getting really great roles. It feels like there's a couple of things she's been in that have been like cancelled, like American Chinese, that got cancelled, didn't it? And then is it The Brother's Son? Did that get cancelled as well? So, I mean, she's amazing and she fits for that, I think. And I just want to see her doing cool stuff. So I'm on board.
Definitely. definitely.
Bordy, are you equally excited? And have you booked tickets for the stage debut of Schmigadoon the Musical, which will be, I believe, landing, I want to say next year?
Wait a minute. I don't know, but I'm genuine.
So Schmigadoon, which has been mercifully cancelled,
yes,
is transferring to the stage.
This is what they're all doing, because the much more important news story though is the Inside Number 9 is transferring to the stage.
Will it be Schmigadoon though? That's the question.
I mean, one can only imagine that it'll be better than Schmigadoon, but and that's genuinely exciting that the Inside Number 9, because it was rumoured for years and years that they might do a stage version, and they confirmed it. I think they confirmed it just after we went off air last week or earlier this week. And I think it's already sold out. It's run maybe. Mm. Or I know there was like people waiting for hours and hours on the internet to buy tickets and stuff. But that is genuinely exciting. And just to know what they're going to do, I think they're going to incorporate some of the stuff of stories that have been in the TV series plus new material. Mm. Fascinating, yeah.
How involved are recent?
Not completely.
I didn't see this. Oh,
100%, yeah. That's totally their baby and they're in it. And it's going to be. So that's the really exciting TV onto the stage news. And a friend of the show, Scott Matthewman, who is on Twitter, mm-hmm. who I think I've seen come to our live events when we've done Pilot TV live events mm-hmm. and Empire things. He said he tweeted, "I hadn't realised there's going to be a Game of Thrones stage play. Do you know about that?"
I can't remember.
Well, there is, and that's being written by Duncan McMillan, who wrote the excellent play People, Places, and Things, which is currently having a stint back in the theatre. And he says, at this rate, referring also to the Inside Number 9 one, Pilot TV is going to need a regular theatre critic to keep up with all the stage spin-offs. I wonder who could fit the bill. Cough, he says. Someone who used to review telly and now reviews theatre sitting right here. Cough. So there you go. Thanks, Scott. We'll note. Yeah.
Scott, we're going to send you to Schmigadoon, the musical. That's going to be your first assignment.
Yeah, he didn't mention Schmigadoon. But yeah, so there you go. TV's things. And of course, Stranger Things, which we both went to, didn't we?
We did. And yeah. Fawlty Towers, which you didn't invite me to, which is happening.
Well, I've still got the plus one. I'm waiting for the, the kind of, gifts.
Oh, I see.
If you want to come, which one of you will get
we'll come bearing gifts to bribe you into taking us.
I saw Stranger Things as well. So good, isn't it?
It is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is good.
I mean, there's like movies going, isn't like Minority Report and Hunger Games and all sorts coming to the stage?
Minority Report is, absolutely right. Like, yeah.
How are you going to do that?
Anyway. Yeah, it's interesting.
A whole new medium.
Speaking of new mediums, Snowpiercer is now coming back to our screens, given that it basically disappeared into the ether. The fourth and final season never aired, but it is coming to AMC and it now finally has a date in the US at least. So Sunday, July the 21st, it's going to land on AMC. Where and how we're going to get to see in the UK, I'm not entirely sure.
Was it on Netflix?
Mm. It was Netflix here, yeah. So right. I'm assuming it'll go to Netflix, possibly at the same time. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But for those of you who want to know, where the train ends up, you'll find out.
Just go round and round and round and round.
Yeah, much like that line in, The Wirral.
Did you see the new The Boys trailer?
I didn't see it.
Oh, I did, yeah.
Fucking good trailer.
I thought you'd be straight on it.
Yeah. I would have done, but I didn't see it.
It was a really good trailer.
I think there'd already been a teaser, right? But this was much longer. It looks good. I'm a big Boys fan.
I love it so much. Gen V, actually, I warmed to eventually. I didn't love it at first because I felt it felt slightly derivative of The Boys. But by the end, I quite like the larger sort of mystery arc to that show. Mm-hmm. But The Boys, I mean, it's outrageous. It's funny. It's charming. I love it.
Yeah. And Homelander looks like on his normal maniacal form. Starlight's like fully on the side of The Boys now. Whereas, she was kind of playing both sides and all that sort of stuff. There's exploding chickens,
superpowered chickens, looked
and
incredible,
livestock and sheep and all sorts going on.
Yeah.
It looked really fun, but looked quite dark.
It looked very violent, by its own standards.
Well, see, this is the thing. I do wonder if they're, they've kind of painted themselves into a corner a little bit by trying to outdo themselves with shock value every season. There's a sense of where do they go now? Like, what are they going to do? I'm slightly scared of what they're going
to
do.
Well, that's the thing that I think the trailer did effectively was to go, well, actually, we can do even more. We can kind of outdo ourselves.
We can out-hero-gasm, hero-gasm.
Yeah, basically. Well, we'll see.
It gave a sense as well, though, that there was a lot of like meat underneath it. And there was a lot of stuff.
Steady.
Because there were references to the January 6th, February 6th. Remember, my brother's birthday. January 6th.
Yeah, references to Boyd's brother's birthday.
Right.
Unexpected in the new series of The Boys.
But there seems to be explicit kind of references to that.
Yeah, which, it does that so well, like, time. tying in the kind of themes of the yes. show with real life politics. Yes. And yeah, I mean, I don't want shocks at the expense of story. I would rather that it keep going to interesting places. I don't need another Herogasm necessarily. I want it to keep up that tone and, you know, that violence that we like. But yeah, I'm really excited. It looks really good.
Sarah Phelps has mentioned it on Twitter
as
well.
I saw that.
Yeah, friend of the show. Phelps, you can't stop watching The Boys, she says.
Yeah. Thank it's God. Great.
She was a fan of Billy, if I
yes.
remember rightly.
Yes.
I did see, well, if we're talking trailers, are you going to mention the other trailer for TV this week? Now, normally I would mention this, be greeted by a pair of blank faces and slightly rolly eyes. But like Star Wars, I want to talk Star Wars, Boyd, and you and Kay have no time for this shit.
That's not true. You always say that. You completely forget that I'm a Star Wars fan. I've watched every single one of these things.
When Kay's here, I think you play it down. I think you play it down when Kay is here.
Well, I'm not sure what you're expecting with me being here, James.
So,
I'm not the Star Wars fan you're looking for.
I know.
Just
But I think, you know, with your Empire hat on, you were literally wearing, okay, it's a Levi's hat, but nevertheless, the Acolyte trailer. What did you think?
Oh, okay, the Acolyte trailer. I thought you were going to mention the Lego Star Wars trailer.
Oh no, I give
Darth Jar Jar.
No fucks about the Lego Star
Which
Wars
I
trailer.
I haven't watched. Okay, no, I'm hyped for the Acolyte. So I'm a very fair weather Star Wars fan in that I don't care about huge swathes of it, but I really like Andor, and I feel like I'm going to like the Acolyte.
Yes.
So yeah, a second trailer dropped. I only watched it once, but it gives a little bit more away because it's like a mystery show, right? Mm. And Jedi's are dying. Jedis? What's a plural?
Go with Jedi.
And yeah, this is how little I know. It showed us a bit more of like the fight choreography and stuff. There's like great stuff with Carrie-Anne Moss and Amanda Stenberg. And it looked really good. I'm really here for it. I think it's my kind of Star Wars, which is mostly not Star Wars at all. But I love Leslie Headland. I love that cast. I think it's going to be really good.
And then at the end, Sith happens. Did you watch it, Boydie?
Yeah, I thought it looked really good. I'm the same. Andor was the best of the TV.
Oh God, yeah. Easily. I mean, but that goes without saying, it was our show of the year.
Yeah, well, probably insisted on by you. Did you go and see? It was the whatever anniversary of the attack of the
Phantom
first
Menace.
One. Phantom Menace. Did you go and see it?
No. I've seen it many times.
Oh, okay. It's so terrible, that film, though, isn't it?
It's come full circle. It's gone from it's terrible, it's good. No, it's terrible, and now it's come back to, do you know what? It's actually not that bad.
Is
and
okay?
I maintain that it is the best of the prequels.
Everyone really? Loves the prequels. I've never seen the prequels, but we
You've
did so much
prequels?
On it for our issue a few months ago that I feel like
what
I know them off by heart, and it's like really upsetting.
Has it
to
put
me.
You off that you could never watch them?
I never need to watch them.
I don't understand how someone of your age has not seen the prequels.
I think maybe Phantom Menace was on in my house. I remember Darth Maul being in half. That's
spoiler.
All I know. Spoiler alert. For
I think that's enough.
Film.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't need it. I'm fine without it, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but it does look really good anyway.
The Acolyte.
Yeah. Stoked for it.
Mm.
Especially stoked for the fact that will we get to see it before this podcast when it comes to review it? Probably not. But, you know, we'll see what we can do.
Well, maybe like the day before sometimes.
Are you more or less excited about The Acolyte versus upcoming Discovery Plus documentary Taylor Swift versus Scooter Braun?
Oh, here we go.
No, James, I should have made a stipulation on this show that you can't talk about fucking Taylor Swift.
But you know, there's another more interesting Taylor Swift-related story.
Okay.
Travis Kelce, her current paramour, Beau.
Funnily enough, Paramore is supporting her at the UK Leg of the Year.
There you go.
Yeah,
he's got his first TV acting role. Have you seen this story?
Is it The Boys?
No. Close. Close, though.
Wait, sorry, go on.
If you didn't, do you know the story?
No, but didn't he do like a roast thing? No.
Yeah, he did.
No, that
did
was Tom Brady.
Thing. But this is his scripted. This is
his first fictional
show. And of course, you'd easily guess whose show this is, by the way. Just think stunt casting, etc. Beth's favourite.
Yeah, I forgot his name.
Yeah,
Ryan Murphy.
Yes.
Travis Kelce is
in the new Ryan Murphy show, which is called Grotesquerie.
Oh God.
And this is
Beth's gonna love this.
Yeah, this is for the FX channel. He's still Ryan Murphy. The whole thing is I'm obsessed with him. He's got his massive Netflix deal. He's still doing stuff for FX, including this new show.
He's so prolific.
He's so prolific. It's insane.
Is anyone watching them anymore?
I mean, I don't know. I did watch the first chunk of the most recent American Horror Story, which I quite enjoyed, actually. And then the last one, last year's one in New York was brilliant, obviously, with Russell Davey. Anyway, this show, Grotesquerie is for FX, and the details of his character haven't been confirmed, but he did reveal that he's going to be in the show, and blah 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 blah. But the show is like a horror thing that's not American Horror Story, basically. So somehow Murphy is doing even more horror things as well as the other things. He's also doing a Kim Kardashian legal drama for Hulu.
Oh, God, I mean, he's obsessed.
Hang on, Ryan Murphy or Travis Kelce?
Ryan Murphy.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, he loves a bit of stunt casting. That's that. That's that news.
Sigh. That makes me tired, that news.
It is a bit exhausting, yeah. There's a lot of news this week, by the way, because we should just mention things that broke just after we did last week's normal podcast. I mentioned them on Extra. What's it called?
I mentioned them on Extra. Do you, by any chance, Boyd, mean our premium subscription service, unmissable show, that is Pilot Plus?
That's the one.
Right.
The biggest news of the year is that Gavin Stacey's back for the last ever episode of Christmas. That broke literally just as we finished recording last week, and I was really pissed off. I almost insist on doing a special insert thing that we do sometimes. But yeah, that's coming, Christmas Day. Gavin Stacey?
I love Gavin and Stacey, but I would be happy not to have any more of it.
Oh, except it ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
I know, but I didn't love the last Christmas special.
Okay.
But don't you need to know how the cliffhanger is resolved?
Yes.
Or do you not care?
I'm all right. I don't know. I didn't.
Sophie's done.
I love the original show the original Christmas special. Yeah. I watch that with my family every year, that original
Christmas
special.
Starring Boyd. He's literally in it.
Yeah.
Obsessed with that episode. But I don't know. I didn't love the last one.
Interesting. Okay.
I will watch it.
Okay. But
I need it to be done.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a massive story, though. And The Split is coming back. Abby Morgan's The Split, did you see that? Coming back for a Barcelona set special two-parter.
Right, I haven't watched it. That's like Nicola Walker, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
fantastic.
I saw the news of that.
Yeah. And Abby Morgan's big Benedict Cumberbatch show starts soon as well, hopefully.
Eric, which
looks absolutely fascinating. That was at the Netflix event.
It was, yeah.
I think there was one other news story I was going to mention, but The Office, the new Office.
Oh, I did see this.
Yeah, this is massive as well. That Peacock has commissioned a new Office series set in the same world as the original American version of The Office. Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant are co-exec producers all over again. That means even more money flowing in to Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant's coffers. It's kind of a good idea. And Donald Gleason.
We have 100% reported this before several weeks ago.
We mentioned him
because that's why I brought it up, because Donald had been cast.
You're right. The show's confirmed.
Like the fact that it's being picked up by Peacock, I think is like the news.
Yes, that's true. Thank you for putting that into context, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a sitcom that I missed off my rewatch list, is The Office. I got into it very late. I only watched it like last year. It took me ages
American
to get into it.
American.
Oh, no, I've loved the British one since I was a kid. But I love The American Office as well. So I'd this is one where I'm like, just leave it alone, I think. Just leave it alone.
I don't mind, because again, it's a completely different world, isn't it? And the idea is a local newspaper that they're trying.
Like a dying newspaper.
The death of print. I mean, yeah, we can all relate.
And it's a bit too close to home, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
a bit triggering.
They might just turn up in the lantern. You never know.
Yeah, it could be traumatic.
A documentary crew.
You're right. Yeah. Like, absolutely.
Just invite them down here.
James be?
Is James Michael Scott, is he?
No, I think he's more,
technically, Nick would be Michael Scott.
Nick would be Michael Scott, yeah.
James Dwight?
Yes, of course he is. He's 100% Dwight.
I feel like
he's
I've
so
been insulted.
Though
I'm not entirely sure. We watched the first two episodes on Pilot Plus recently, as in we watched The Office UK and US. I've obviously haven't got a feel for all of the supporting cast at this stage.
Okay, no, Dwight's the funny one.
Dwight's the funny one.
Okay.
Yes. And the other thing just to say is, because we talked about The Veil, you remember I talked about The Veil, which is the Elizabeth Moss starring Stephen Knight spy thriller drama thing. That has had a date confirmed May 29th on the Disney Plus.
Okay.
Because I was moaning on about...
Did you put it in the calendar?
Not yet. No, sorry. I've not yet put it in the Pilot TV TX calendar. Sorry.
Are we done with news?
I think we finished with news.
Brian Fuller has departed the Camp Crystal Lake series.
That was
the Friday the 13th one.
Well, yeah, because I saw someone tweet that it wouldn't be a Brian Fuller project without him departing it.
I mean, that's fair.
Which feels very true.
That is fair.
Well, he likes departing projects.
Yeah. It wouldn't be his project if he didn't leave it. Yeah.
It's a shame, isn't it? I quite like the idea. Hannibal was brilliant. He managed to stick with Hannibal, didn't he? For like, what, three series?
Well, yeah, it got cancelled.
To be fair.
On a literal cliffhanger.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
As opposed to Gavin and Stacey, which has ended on a metaphorical cliffhanger.
Gavin and Spacey.
That's the crossover we need. Gavin and Spacey.
Absolutely not.
Wow. Illegal drama.
Christ.
Gavin versus Spacey. Anyway, let's move on from that very rapidly and into this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have The Gathering on Channel 4, which is not, much to my dismay, a spin-off of legendary 80s film and subsequent 90s TV show Highlander, but rather a tale of toxic teenagers and, frankly, if we're honest, even more toxic parents. This is kind of like a mystery thriller. It sees a group of cutthroat school gymnasts, which is not a sentence I thought I would say today, a dad with a violent past, the worst mother in the world, and I include breeders in this, and most crucially, a murder at an illegal rave. So which illegal raver should talk about this gathering? There can be only one, and it's Boyd Hilton. Boydie, will you tell us about this Merseyside set show, or will you be a fucking chicken?
Dear God.
I'm sorry
to everyone. Yeah. Not just Liverpoolians,
apologies.
Everyone.
Apologies, yeah, massive apologies. I should come clean and say I did host the Q&A for this
All right,
show.
Absolutely biased. Disregard everything he's about to say.
Yeah, so, because if you'd known that, you probably would have gone
I would have gone Sophie instead, 100%.
But you didn't know that, fair enough. I think this is a really interesting show because it kind of... It's written by Helen Walsh. This is her first TV script. She's a successful novelist and she's written a couple of films as well. But this is her first TV drama. And I think what she's done is she's used the whodunit films. It starts off with this rave on this actual island off near the Wirral, which I can't remember what it's called.
No, I can't remember what it's called, but yeah.
And this young woman gets attacked and you don't know who the attacker is. And then what the really interesting form of the show is, all the subsequent episodes, the six episodes, focus kind of on one of the possible suspects or one of the friends or parents or whatever who are likely suspects in attacking her.
Right, okay.
And you kind of don't necessarily notice that until you carry on watching it. So I've seen four episodes.
Right, because we've only seen one, so I didn't realise that. That's interesting.
So I've seen the first four because I did host the thing, so that they gave me access to that many. And it really develops fascinating as it goes on. And I think it uses that compelling thriller whodunit format to explore really interesting ideas. So as you said, the mother is like pushy parents. It really goes for broke in that because not only she is awful, played by Vinette Robinson.
Oh my God.
This is the mother of her friend.
God. Yeah.
The mother of the friend. So you've got this really interesting class thing going on. The main young woman, Kelly, played by Eva Morgan, right, and this is her first acting role.
She's amazing.
She's
really good.
Incredible.
Yeah.
First ever acting role. Not just first ever TV acting role. Literally her first acting role. Phenomenal. She's so naturalistic. It's incredible.
So much like spark and wisdom, really.
Yeah. And to be fair, she's acting opposite Sadie Sovereign, who plays Jessica, who, and she's an acting powerhouse because she was in Fate the Wink Saga. So, do you know what I mean?
That's all that needs to be said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Standing in her shadow, her winged shadow.
Exactly. So you've got this class conflict between these two friends who are they're not only high school gymnasts, they're actually going to be in the England team as well. Mm. So they're elite, I think is the idea. They're elite gymnasts.
Cutthroat gymnasts.
So it's exploring that world of cutthroat, you know, and coaching and all of that.
Yeah.
The pushy parents. So you've got her, the posher girl's pushy parent, played by Vinette Robinson, who is the almost awful mother in terms of pushing her into doing stuff.
Oh, my God.
It's extraordinary.
So horrible.
You've got the fact that the Eva character's mother has died and her dad, played by Warren Brown, very effectively is looking after her and her little kid brother.
Yeah.
And her dad's been involved in some kind of incident.
That's right. And the way that's played out is it just kind of drops into the story unheralded. And you're just like, did I drift off at one point. Did I miss something?
Yeah.
But no, you're supposed to be a little bit discombobulated.
Then there's
because Richard Coyle. It's Richard Coyle.
Yeah. I'm getting to that. Then there's this whole, I'll get to the Richard Coyle bit is that Richard Coyle is the father of another boy who goes to the same posh school as the posh girl, and his teenage son is a troubled figure in ways that I won't go into because that's a spoiler. But Richard Coyle's an even more possibly pushy parent than Vinette Robinson's character.
Right.
And he is an utter, the more you see of him, I think episode 4 is where you see more of him and his son.
Right.
That relationship is just twisted, right? So you've got that element. You've got this whole free-running parkour.
What? There is a lot of parkour in this first episode.
So her mate, her best friend, her confidant is this incredibly ripped young guy who's a parkour free-runner.
Yeah.
And he's like her confidant. And and what's really clever is you kind of make assumptions about all these different characters, like in terms of their class and the kind of people they hang out with, et cetera, et cetera. And then all of these things kind of change as the series goes on. One of the kind of, not his mates, but one of the people in their parkour freerunning gang is an immigrant, is a migrant who's, cut off the boats, literally. And his story is explored more as it goes on. And there's a kind of flirtation between him going back to, and Eva. So it's an incredibly complex, intertwined cast of characters, all of whom are possibly suspects for the crime that the show begins with. But it also tackles so many different ideas and themes, from the pushy parenting, drugs, sexuality, being a teenager in the age of social media.
Yeah.
All of that
and
is
parkour.
In there. Parkour, free running, the dangers of parkour.
And that's shot so well.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's filmed brilliantly.
There is a bit when they're doing jumps on the roof and I had to look away because it was stressing me out.
Do you know
so
what
much.
As well? On my way, I often walk home, right? And
You jumped off the roof.
And boy, that's just how he gets home. He goes across the rooftops.
I free run pretty much from here.
Yeah, he doesn't bother with the tube.
When I get to Waterloo, right, you know where the big IMAX is?
Yeah.
There's a whole load of free run parkour people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, and there's they leap between the pavement and the subway exit. It's terrifying. And every time I go past that, I'm like, please, God, just, don't do anything
don't
stupid.
Don't land on me.
So it really reminded me of that they very effectively kind of used that whole thing and ratchet up the tension. And there's the whole competitive gymnastics thing. And then it just goes, but you know what? It's all dealt with in a really convincing, kind of grounded in reality, fascinating way. I think it's a really exceptionally good show. And as I said, I do think the more you watch it, the more gripping and fascinating it becomes. She's done a kind of amazing job of getting all of this stuff into a six-part show.
It does. Like that first episode feels like it is juggling so many balls. The only thing is, it's quite stressful. It's quite a real knot in your gut kind of show, and not just because you want to know what happens, it's just because the fractious relationships, frankly, the acrophobia, just like people hanging off the edge of buildings. Like I found it a really stressful watch, but it's very good. It's very, very good.
Yeah. Like,
that's part of like the thrill of watching gymnastics or the free running is like it's always high stakes because it's just like the risk of injury is just so obviously there all the time. But I was so hooked in by this and I hadn't really expected to be. I sort of put it on because I needed to watch it and then I like couldn't stop watching it. I couldn't look away. She's just to come back to Eva Morgan. She's so good as like the heart and soul of this show. And watching her bounce off the other girl, Jessica, her friend, is really great. There's quite a lot of surprises in there. There's a bit of a crash incident that was like shocking. So it's like shot really well. As well as the characters. The soundtrack's great. It feels just very, like, very fresh. And, like, I like the Liverpool setting. It feels like it's not sort of people doing young people, which I know is a gripe of Beth's. It feels authentic in that way. And I just really wanted to keep watching it. Even though it is kind of like a format. I didn't know about the different perspective things because we only had one episode. I only had one episode. That format where it's like you see something bad happening and then you flash back to a month earlier. We've all seen that before. Mm. I think that can get
tiring.
It's
Boyd's favourite thing.
I know. I did think of you immediately. When I saw it 1 month earlier, I thought, Boyd's not going to like that.
No, but I think it's done so brilliantly here.
Yeah, it kind of like, you don't feel tired by it because you just want to know what happened. Yeah.
It's the whole crux of the storytelling really as well in this case. That's the difference, I think. This is all about the time, what's happened before, building up to the story that we see in the present. So the way this time jumps, I think, is really effective and clever.
It also reminds me, I don't know if you guys saw it, there was a film out in lockdown, like 2020, called Perfect 10, which was a little indie film by a director called Eva Riley. And it was set in Hastings, and it was about a young girl, like a young working class girl who had like the potential to be an elite gymnast. And it was like full of gymnastics, and it was about her kind of, and her like family situation and trying to get into the sport and all this sort of thing. Really like similar themes. Mm. It's so good. It had a great soundtrack as well. So it just like, it feels like a really interesting world to be in.
Yeah,
And I think this does it really well.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, I didn't see it actually, but it was, you know,
it's a good movie, that, if you can find it, if it's anywhere.
I should mention the Ripped character, I was struggling to find his name.
That's what I say, you might want to narrow it down. There are a few of them, but yes.
It's called Adam. Well, the confidant of Eva.
Oh, yes.
He's played by Sonny Walker.
We see quite a lot of Adam.
Yeah, and Bazzi is the guy who's the who's a Syrian refugee. He's played by Luca Kamla Chapman, who's, they're all brilliant actors as well. All the young characters are fantastic, completely hold their own.
Yeah, and they're authentic.
Characters.
In some ways it's a risky format, isn't it? When you do different episodes from different standpoints. Like, it works narratively,
yeah,
but you also dissociate from the characters that you're starting to gravitate towards. So.
What's really clever about it is that part of, I think you almost don't notice until you're told. It's one of those. It's whereby, so I kind of almost partly only really know that that is the way the structure show because the writer explained that.
Full Rashomon.
So it's not. It's quite subtly done to the point where you keep in touch with all the general ensemble week by week. Mm. There's just more of a focus on one character or one character and their parent invariably than there would be in the other episode. So it's very cleverly modulated in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really good show. I'm going to keep watching it.
Yeah, I think it's great.
The Gathering, then, on Channel 4. When, boy,
Tuesday, the 14th of May, 2024, 9 p.m.
Okay, and on Channel 4, then?
It is on Channel 4. It's also on their online thing, channel4.com, as well, which is just the name of Channel 4's online catch-up service, rather than it used to be All 4 or More 4, or no, All 4, or was it 4OD?
4OD, whatever 4OD. It was.
And you know, there's now, by the way, which you could have put in news, but it's just struck me. It was announced a while ago, but the UK TV channels, like Gold and Dave and W, they're being renamed U hyphen those names. So it's U hyphen W, U hyphen Gold, U hyphen Dave, and it's really weird.
What's the thinking behind it?
I don't know. I think they're just...
To make it less UK-centric and less TV-centric.
I think it's more a reminder that they're all part of the same umbrella family. So the U, so they want to emphasize that it's U slash hyphen.
What does the U stand for?
UK.
UK TV. TV.
So instead
what? Should it not, I don't know, be UK dash.
Well, no, that's too clunky. So I think they're hoping there'll be U. Yeah, watching U Dave or UW.
Okay.
That's
first of all,
like capitalism eating itself.
First of all, having a channel called Dave is confusing enough. But U Dave.
Yeah.
No. Just what?
It's
the
crazy.
Fuck.
It was announced a while ago, and I remember thinking that's just mad. They'll never go through with it. But then this week, I think I got sent the logos. I was like, oh, okay, this is actually.
That's worse than Now.
Now slash Now TV imbroglio.
Now it's on Now. It's on Now. No, it's not on Now. It's on later, but it's on Now.
And my favorite thing about we've covered this before, but both Prime Video, Amazon Prime Video. You can't call it Amazon.
No, right? Just Prime Video.
But if you go to any launch of any Prime Video show, I guarantee you the talent involved will call it Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
and I guarantee you
they're not being briefed to the extent that we are.
And I guarantee you that any Sky slash Now event that the talent will call it Now TV, even though it's not called.
And I just want to say that as someone who has to tweet out about these shows, and I'm trying to say like it's on Now TV, Now
Nightmare,
Now Thriller,
it's blah, blah, blah.
Well, this is why Now is in capitals.
Which, you know, I do. If you ever see a tweet that's like, why she said Now 5 times, just know that I struggled and leave me alone.
Yeah,
it's really hard.
They should really think more about us.
I know.
Yeah.
We are the real victims.
We might be doing a U hyphen show quite soon. U alibi.
Oh my God.
What? So UW?
UW.
UW. Not the CW,
the
UW.
The UW.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's crazy. Wow.
Magazines.
Okay. We've got another show coming up now. And it's Orphan Black Echoes, a sequel to the 2013 show Orphan Black, which is the one that put Tatiana Maslany on the map. This one, however, stars Kristen Ritter, and she's a clone on a mission. And this one is set many years off the original in the year 2052, making it a nice little sci-fi show. This one aired in the US, I want to say, at the end of last year, I think. It's taken a while to get here. But this finds its way to ITVX this week. Sophie, were you an Orphan Black fan when this came out in... however many years it was in 2013.
I have watched, I'd like to say maybe 2 or 3 seasons of Orphan Black.
Okay.
I didn't finish it.
Yeah, same here.
And I didn't watch, I was like late to it, but I watched a good chunk of it, but I can't remember a lot of it. And so I don't know how it ended.
No, but, neither do I. But that was, so Tatiana Maslany played a woman who sees someone who looks just like her jump under a train.
Yeah.
And then essentially adopts her life because she's homeless at the time. And then she meets a whole load of other people and it turns out she's one of many clones.
Many, many clones, and, yeah. She plays like 20 different roles. She's amazing in that show. Very deserved that it put her on the map like it did. This, like you say, is like a sequel 30-odd years after, created by Anna Fishkill. And the connective tissue here is that in Orphan Black, the original show, Sarah Manning, which was the like protagonist, the main character, the main clone of that show, had a daughter called Kira. I can't remember if that happened in the seasons I watched or later seasons.
No, she's in the first season.
She's in it from the start, right? Okay. So the connective tissue here is that Kira is now all grown up and she's played by Keely Hawes, star of many great things, Life on Mars, etc. Doing an American accent, which I couldn't actually get past.
Mm. Technically, she's in Ashes to Ashes rather than Life on Mars, but yes, I know what you mean.
I knew what I did watch those shows. I love those shows. That's what I meant. So I can't quite get past her US accent, but it's okay. So yeah, the kind of clone in question here is Kristen Ritter, as you say, who I really love a lot. She's great in Jessica Jones. She's great in Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. You ever watch that show?
Yes, I did.
Wrongly cancelled because of how it got messed up due to the writer's strike. And basically this starts kind of very typically sci-fi in that she sort of wakes up, she's suffering from amnesia, she doesn't know who she is. Keely Hawes is like a doctor or a therapist talking to her. And sort of reveals to her that she underwent some sort of operation or something, a procedure.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have long-term memory. This is all in the first couple of minutes. This is not a spoiler. And she kind of breaks out of there. Her character's called Lucy. And it kind of picks up with her sort of trying to live a life outside of that. It moves forward 2 years and you don't really know what's happened in those 2 years. But you find her on this kind of farm situation. She has a boyfriend called Jack, who's played by Avan Hogia. And his daughter, played by Zariella Langford, is called Charlie. And Lucy's very good friends with Charlie, looks after her. Charlie's deaf. And she's got this little life for herself that she's trying to build. But then something happens. Her old life catches up with her. She sort of goes on the run to figure it out. I was looking forward to this because I really enjoyed Orphan Black, but I was a bit disappointed by this. It feels like because you know where it's coming from and you know what Orphan Black was about, and because it starts with all this kind of lab stuff and like her as a clone and like there's all this sort of like a body that she discovers and all that kind of stuff, it feels like there's I don't know what I'm waiting for her to uncover because I feel like I know what her story is in a way. And like there's like teasers of what's happening, what's to come. So you don't know necessarily Keely Hawes' character. She's kind of like this scientist who's created this company that can kind of manufacture human tissue. That's kind of what the cloning part of it is. But and you can't tell whether she's good or bad sort of thing. It sort of hints different ways. You think she's like the antagonist to begin with because she's kind of keeping Lucy prisoner, but then you're sort of not sure by the end of the episode. And I just felt like the opening and the setup in a way kind of answers a lot of questions and doesn't raise a lot of them. And so I felt like I didn't have any drive to keep watching this to find out what happens in a way. Kristen Ritter is strong. She has some like nice chemistry with the like little family that she's made. There's some kind of like shocking moments in there that did surprise me. I didn't see coming, but it all felt to me just like quite a generic premise and quite a generic setup. And I did not feel compelled to keep watching it, sadly.
I think exactly what you say. It follows very closely the template of the original show, but without the mystery element. And that was the key part of Orphan Black.
You
were uncovering, and then you said, oh, she's a clone. But then it was like the depth of it and the different clones and the clones. And there are clones on both sides of the aisle in that one. Like, it's a really complex, and there's a whole mythology, and then there are religious zealots trying to kill the clones. Like, they go a little bit too far down the rabbit hole, if I'm honest with you. It gets a little bit like, you know, when you start getting into like Dark Angel territory. If you ever saw that James Cameron show, which had Jessica Alba, put Jessica Alba on the map.
Right.
But Orphan Black, I enjoy, but then when it started to get silly, I stopped watching it. This almost seems to begin where Orphan Black got silly.
It begins with the answers. I don't know. Yeah. There's got to be more that it's going to...
That's the problem.
There's got to be more.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make me think that there is more.
The problem for me is it takes the bizarre creative decision for Keely Hawes to explain what's happened to her and who she is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why?
But
why
are you, I mean, if you're calling it Orphan Black Echoes, you kind of, that cat is out of the bag.
It's out of the bag for us, the viewer.
Yeah.
But they could have, so the jeopardy is just, she's now being chased by people who just want to bring her back to the lab, maybe, for reasons.
Yeah.
And as you say, Keely Hawes seems to be, I don't even know if it is that ambiguous. She seems to be basically a well-meaning scientist whose organization is ruthless.
Yeah.
Right. And they're the real baddies. She's just
capitalism.
She's caught in the middle of them all as the scientist, as like the Oppenheimer figure almost, while everyone's being really evil and bad surrounding them. But I just thought it was a weird thing for her to know why. It just would have added another level of intrigue if she herself, that was the whole thing about Orphan Black, that she herself didn't know and puzzling it out. It would have been, I just think it was weird for them to decide to not bother with that, for Keely Hawes to just explain everything right from the start. So I thought that was misguided, and I agree with you. There's just no real reason, there's no dramatic tension for me in wanting to carry on watching, because she knows what's happening. She's just running away, protecting her daughter, fine. She's with the hunky guy, that's fine. But none of it is interesting enough to keep to force you to carry on watching.
No, and there's not enough there in terms of character and in terms of her, not that she's performing it
perfectly well,
like she's great and she's very watchable, but there's kind of not enough there to make up for how generic the setup feels and make you just want it, whereas The Gathering feels like the opposite. It was like, there's like an incident and then it flashes back, that we've seen that all before, but instantly I was so hooked in by those characters that I didn't really care that I'd kind of seen the setup before. I wanted to know what happened, but I feel like that it hasn't really achieved that one here. And I don't know, the writing feels a bit clunky. Like, there's at one point she's in bed with her boyfriend, and they apparently have been together for a year. But then he's asking her like basic questions.
Yes.
I was like, wouldn't you have asked her that in like week one?
Completely.
And then it's like just to do some expositioning and catch us up. But then it's like, that just feels kind of, I don't know, that feels a bit clunky.
Yeah. Oh, it's so clunky. It was like, and then it's like, oh, now I'm going to go and see Keely Hawes and she's going to explain it all anyway. It's like, oh, God.
It's
a shame because production value, it looks
I like the future setting. I was quite excited when it was in 2050 something. Yes. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, but they don't really know that much.
Not really, they're more touchscreens.
Quite clunky Boston skyline is all modern. In a way, I found very unconvincing. And not just like dodgy whatever CGI or a map painting or whatever they've used for that. It just doesn't look like a real skyline to me. Like, I thought the buildings looked a bit preposterous.
No, although they found some nice like cool locations with like cool buildings that makes you feel like you're in the future somewhat.
Yeah, that's true.
But and that's a nice sort of contrast to the kind of farm life that she's trying to live. But it just didn't hook me in, unfortunately. Yeah.
There was a big box like in what's it called? You know, the
Dark Matter.
Dark Matter. Yeah. People they love a big box.
Not enough big boxes. Shows.
Not a big hole.
No big holes, no big boxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on with sci-fi at the moment? Well, Orphan Black Echoes, which airs on UITVX when, Boydie?
UITVX now.
Now you've pissed off you and ITV. It's on ITVX, Thursday, the 16th of May, 2024. I think it's all available in one week.
Why do you keep giving us the year?
Because it's a running joke.
Joke in inverted commas.
Yeah.
It's a joke that I feel might run its course, but
I must have missed that. Sorry.
It was for Kay's benefit. Kay, the release date pedant.
Yes.
Right. Right, finally this week, we have Rebus on UBBC One. Not to be confused with Rebus on UITV, which aired in the noughties. And also followed the adventures of Rebus, who was Ian Rankin's kind of maverick Scottish inspector. Now, this reboot goes back to when Rebus was a lowly detective sergeant, albeit one who I think begins the show in, shall we say, a rather unconventional manner of policing.
Slightly.
You know?
Slightly.
Just putting that out there. So, Boydie, this one is set in Edinburgh. Tell us, what did you think?
Jesus Christ.
That got worse. With each syllable, that got worse.
By the way, I forgot to say, Keely Hawes' accent was really good in Thingy, but it was a bit distracting. I know what you mean.
It was jarring.
It's jarring, but just because we know her so well, it's such an... a British woman, but yeah, more jarring than your fucking.
I sound like I'm from Scotland.
I mean, this is very, very Scottish, it has to be said.
Oh, it's all Scottish.
As a fan of Ian Rankin is a brilliant, brilliant writer, and his Rebus novels are fantastic. And I remember quite liking the original ITV version where it was John Hannah, then it was Ken Stott.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm going to say is, this: I can't imagine Ken Stott, with all due respect, doing the kind of things that in this Richard Rankin does.
No relation.
I actually looked that up.
Yeah, his name is Richard Harris.
Yeah.
But he had to change it to Richard Rankin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very confusing. Of course, it's very confusing.
Yeah.
Just having to go Richard Rankin. He's like naked in it. He's like, you know, just lying on the bed with his arse out at one point. But as you say, as you alluded to, James, the first scene is really shocking scene of violence that he enacts. Again, this is not a spoiler because it's literally the opening scene. And it's quite shocking the extent to which he's embroiled in that violence.
You're like, oh, hello.
Yeah.
Like, right.
And he doesn't really let up from there because he carries on. Basically, in this version of the story, he is heavily embroiled with in the kind of Edinburgh gangster scene and in all kinds of ways. And he's basically, at one point, he has another moment, bout of violence about 10 minutes later, yeah. No one going into detail with. And he's just been generally like scary, violent, quite nasty guy. And there's almost nothing, you could watch this whole first episode and think, is he just the villain? It's just about him being a nasty, violent villain. He's actually a cop, trying to.
But exactly what you're saying there. So obviously, as we've talked about this podcast for, I and I think you have a thing for those kind of literary adaptation police dramas on TV, but this doesn't feel like one because it feels part sort of literary police TV thing, part social realist drama.
Like, yeah, completely.
And I was quite
Ken Loach
thrown. Yeah. Yeah, it had a real Loachian vibe to it. Mm. I was really wrong footed on this.
It's really interesting. Yes, I agree completely. Yeah, it's not. Doesn't feel like a procedural or
not at all.
No. It's properly gritty. It's like gritty drama with which just happens to be about this really ruthless, quite nasty cop who's dealing with, who's admittedly, you know, he's surrounded by nastiness and horribleness and gangsters and people being violent and terrible. So, but I thought it was really well done. I thought he was great. I thought it was, you know, I thought the grittiness was felt very natural rather than it being ladled on and kind of in an obvious way. The interesting thing about this whole series is, you know, it was, so BBC One has acquired it.
Mm.
They didn't make it. It's actually made by a Swedish streaming service, Viaplay.
Yeah,
It's a Scandi.
It's Swedish.
Yes, yeah, it's Scandi. A Scandi Noir commission. That the BBC is then bought and is now showing this on Saturday nights.
As you said, the most Scottish show that's it bleeds it's iron bonkers. Brew. Like, it's extraordinary.
It's mad. Yes, completely, 100%. Yeah, it's actually a Swedish production. It's really weird.
That is. Although, to be fair, like, this you know, Rankin's, his oeuvre, his genre is sort of tartan noir, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
completely.
The thing that he does.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Scandis do enjoy a bit of noir, so.
For sure.
I struggled with this a bit.
Too Scottish?
No. Too
Scottish.
Unlike you, James, I don't judge things like that. I'm not, you know, from the Northeast, not that far from Scotland. This, I mean, you might yell at me here. I remember watching Rebus when my grandma was looking after me.
Oh, God. Wow.
And my grandma likes a, you know, she likes a terrestrial TV police show. And I can remember watching it and all that sort of thing, and Wiring the Blood and Silent Witness and all that kind of thing.
Touching evil.
Can I just shock you now? Can I just shock you by saying I remember writing about Rebus in Heat magazine.
Yeah.
The first series in the year 2000. Carry on.
I'm sorry that I had to say
when John Hannah was in the
year 2000 when I was 8 years old. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
This to me felt like I could have been watching one of those shows. It didn't feel fresh at all. It felt like, I mean, for a start, I find the whole lone wolf, alcoholic, maverick, sad boy detective thing quite grating, quite wearing. We've seen that a million times. I don't feel like he was bringing anything new to that. And it was just quite a lot of miserable middle-aged men doing miserable things. And he's awful.
He's hard to root for. He is very hard to root for. Like that scene with his brother, which comes early on, you're like, you're a massive bellend, aren't you?
Yeah, and I don't like him. I don't really care about him. I don't want to see what happens to him. It was very bleak. It hints at paedophilia 10 minutes in. And I thought, oh, God.
It's all downhill from there.
Sorry.
And I liked, to be fair, the bit that I did like was, so at one point he's got this new kind of police partner that he's working with who's English, and at one point he's like talking to her about the sort of gentrification of Edinburgh and like people come here and then they stay here and, you know, there's obviously an underbelly to it that they don't know and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, that's kind of an interesting theme, but overall I found this kind of just really cold, and it didn't feel new to me. It felt like the same sort of character I've seen a million times, and I just felt a bit miserable when I finished watching it.
It is miserable.
It is grim.
It has a real bleakness to it. I think also part of the problem is that the sort of Lochian element, the social realist element, means that you don't get into the kind of plot, as it were, until that last 5 minutes of the episode.
The policey plot. You don't really know. It's a lot about his family.
A lot of his setting up the bleakness of his existence, right? His mentor is in a wheelchair. He's having an ill-advised relationship. He's, you know, his daughter is now very attached to his ex-wife's very rich new partner. He doesn't get on with his brother. He doesn't like his partner. Like, he's just got quite a shit life. And he starts off, obviously, he's clearly a dreadful policeman for a variety of reasons.
Why would I want to watch this guy?
Yeah, but this is the thing. And so without the kind of police procedural hook, the mystery, like the case, if you will, you're just like, I was stuck hanging out with this raging bellend.
Yeah, God.
And I kind of need a bit more. So I found him interesting, but not particularly good company. Like, I was curious to see how it would play out, but I wanted to warm to him more than I did warm to, in the way that I very much enjoy this particular genre of show. But I actually quite liked that they did something slightly different and this social realist element was introduced, but I felt it was dominant in this first episode. I felt the police thing was such almost like a minor, you know, supporting plot line to this, that I thought, this isn't really what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I found the fact that I did think it was different, actually. And I think
it is, yeah.
I don't know those kind, this genre of shows as well as you guys. Yeah. I've seen a lot of them, but I don't know.
I think the way it made you feel, which I think I totally get, was part. I think was a deliberate choice on its part to be this kind of grim and not make it your standard procedural and not get into the story of a crime until the last few minutes. I kind of liked all of that being different, and he's kind of like morose. Yeah. When he's not being violent, he's morose just kind of. I thought he was kind of refreshingly almost uncharismatic, and you know, he hasn't got any of those. I'm not secretly an opera lover, or
he's not
that
showy.
He's like the anti-Morse, right? So I kind of liked all that, really. Very underplayed in a way by him, by Richard Rankin, no relation. Lucy Shorthouse, by the way, played the partner who's also in We Are Lady Parts. Of course, she's one of the main characters in We Are Lady Parts. She's great, and their interaction, like, he neither seems to dislike or like her. Like, I like the fact that they're just kind of a bit ambivalent towards each other. She wants to be helpful, kind of thing. I found it quite. I'll tell you, the bottom line is, I believed it. I believed it all. I kind of bought into the whole idea of it and the kind of tone of it. Whereas I think you watch a lot of crime dramas, a lot of police procedurals, and you think, oh, you know, it's all a bit ridiculous, but I'm still enjoying it. This I found completely realistic and authentic, and it almost like underplaying the thriller element. I quite enjoyed that about it, I guess.
And I don't like the argument that it's like someone, you need to have a character that's likable to want to watch it. I know this is your argument with Succession, and I don't agree with it.
No, it's basic.
And
stupid.
Does this
fail the Bellend test? It might do.
He is a gigantic Bellend.
Well, he is. But I'm saying, are there any non-Bellends in there?
Yeah. That's not the reason that I wouldn't watch it. Do you know what I mean? That's not a defining factor for me. But it's just something about this that I found just.
It's definitely an acquired taste, I think, for sure.
He's like a gruff detective, and then there's a new one. It's like new kid on the block, and they've got a dynamic. And I feel like I've seen it all before, but you're saying it's fresh. So I think the way it approaches it is fresh.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. The basic bald facts. I keep using the word bald today, like in honor of me and James. It does seem to be a formula, but I actually think.
But that's the nature of the genre.
I think the way it's done is different.
Yeah, they've taken the blocks of the Rebus character and the story. Lines surrounding that character, and they've treated it in a very unusual way, in an unexpected way. I've not read any of Rankin's books myself, but I don't imagine they're written quite like this.
I mean, no, but that, you know, it is different. Yeah, it's definitely doing something new with the character, I would say. Yeah, for sure. But equally, it feels like a very believable version of the younger version of the character we meet.
Have you? How many?
I've only literally read two.
And so this, you watched the first episode. Did you watch any further ones?
Oh, sorry, this episode, no, just the first one.
See, I'm curious to see how much does it kick up a gear, and does the police stuff, like, was this a sort of social realist sort of scene setting episode?
I think that's my guess. Yeah.
Or is it just going to be this kind of slightly languorous, chilled vibe all the way through, where, you know, the police case will move along incrementally at a glacial sort of pace, and then we'll just be hanging out on the council estate for the rest of it? Like,
no,
sorry. The best thing about it is there's a character called Jimmy McJagger. That's the one good thing that
Jimmy
I like
McJagger.
About him.
Yes, yeah. And there are enough Stones gags in there, I think. So, well, this lands on the UBBC One Wembley.
UBBC One X on Saturday, the 18th of May, 2024, at 9:25. I'm still persevering.
Stop it.
No, it's fine. I like it.
9:25 p.m. And it's all on the iPlayer the day before, for some reason.
Hang on, what?
Yeah, it's on all on the iPlayer.
On the
UiPlayer. Friday, on the
UiPlayer.
UiPlayerX.com. The day before. Yeah, I don't know why. I think it's showing airing BBC One Scotland first.
All
for
right.
reasons, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but there it is.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Not
fabulous.
For me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Do we have a pick of the week?
Oh.
I do. Yes. Very clear one. It's The Gathering.
It's The Gathering.
100%. Yeah.
The Gathering is our pick of the week. I think that's fair to say. What else have we missed this week, Boydie, other than The Big Cigar on Apple TV Plus, which we'll be covering on Pilot Plus?
The Big Cigar. Bridgerton, a little show that could. Bridgerton is back on Thursday on the Netflix. They're doing the thing they do now with all their biggest shows, where they divide it to two chunks. So the first half of the third season of Bridgerton arrives on Thursday, and then the second half will arrive a month later or whatever. But this is the one that focuses on particularly on Nicola Coughlan's character, Penelope Featherington. So I'm particularly excited because she is the best thing about Bridgerton.
Yeah,
obviously.
And Colin Bridgerton, Luke Newton.
Exactly.
They're friends and then they become more. I'm looking forward to it because I love her. She's so good.
She's brilliant, yeah. So there's that. There's the next episode of Doctor Who is episode 3, written by Stephen Moffat. This is called Boom. This is where he arrives on a war-torn planet, the Doctor, and he steps on a landmine. And the entire episode is him dealing with how he's going to get off this fucking landmine and not die. there is The King is a Italian series 2 of an Italian drama on Sky Atlantic / Now. Not Now TV, but just Now. And that's on Wednesday. You Now. Wednesday 15th, 10 p.m. There's a documentary by Liz Carr, the brilliant actress Liz Carr.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on BBC One on Tuesday called Better Off Dead, which looks at, she's a brilliant disability rights campaigner, and she was in the OA. And I met her on set, my famous best day of my life, when I went on set of the OA in a forest outside San Francisco. She was there on set.
She's also in Silent Witness.
She was in Silent Witness,
which I mentioned earlier.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, but she's fantastic. She was in Devs as well. And she's made this one-off film looking at the question of assisted dying from the point of view of disabled people and what she thinks about that whole topic. That's BBC One Tuesday.
Michael Mann's Tokyo Vice returns.
Yes.
On UBBC 2. That's on Tuesday the 14th, which is exciting.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mentioned Outer Range Season 2 comes back to Prime Video on the 16th.
Thursday. And The Equalizer, the news of The Equalizer, which is pretty much the biggest show on American TV now, by the way. Do you know
is
that?
It?
Yeah.
What?
Number
it's
one.
Queen Latifah's it's Latifah.
Yeah,
Equalizer.
Queen Latifah.
Crime show. Yeah, it's massive. Absolutely massive on American TV. So that is arriving on Tuesday on Sky Witness / Now. And I think that's about it.
Okay. Well, I guess that's it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please do head over to Apple TV Podcasts or indeed Spotify and leave us a 5-star rating. we're on the socials at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer, at
Sophie F. Butcher.
And of course, at Pilot TV Pod. As we've mentioned, on Pilot Plus, we'll be handling The Big Cigar. And we haven't yet talked about what else we're going to do. Will we be doing Doctor Who? Who knows? We'll find out. And on next week's show, we will have a number of things going on. Trying returns to Apple. And we'll have the stars of that show on here to talk about that. What else is on next week, Boydie?
Insomnia with Vicky McClure. her big Paramount Plus show.
That's right,
that
yeah.
arrives.
And then some other things.
Some other things are on as well.
Okay, yeah. Good. There you go. We like specifics on this podcast. Yeah. Sophie, thank you very much for joining us this week. Have you enjoyed your pilot TV debut?
I have very much. Thank you for having me.
This is exciting now.
I'm not sure I conveyed it, but I do watch a lot of TV, so I'm happy to be talking about it.
Yeah, didn't you come along to our first pilot live show?
Yes, I did, when I didn't work here before then.
And it was your live show. We didn't have merch then, so you couldn't buy merch.
No, and it was in the smaller room at King's Place.
That's right, it was.
And it was you guys and Terry and Russell Tovey.
It was. Oh, yeah. Did you get one of the Computer Exchange films that I was throwing out to the audience at the end of it?
No, I don't.
Not films, TV shows. What am I talking about? Yeah. This is a TV podcast. Yeah. There were no films. This is, if Boyd was doing it, it would have been films. But no, for me, it was very much TV boxes.
It would have been seven on 8K. I was there.
And
I've been here from the beginning, guys. Long time listener.
There you go.
First time appearance.
First time podder.
Yeah.
First of many, I hope.
Yeah. Good times. Good times. All right. Well, until next week, you pilot out.